Suffering from seasonal irritants? As the pollen count rises, support your immune system with Quiksilver Scientific Cystaid, a targeted blend of nutrients and botanicals designed to help maintain healthy histamine balance and everyday comfort. Quiksilver Scientific Cystaid works with your body's natural response to seasonal environmental challenges, so you can feel your best all season long. Get 10% off and free shipping at tryqs.com/podcast. Again, that's tryqs.com/podcast for 10% off and free shipping. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
They just don't make technology like they used to.
They don't make it like they're going to.
Oh, right. Of course. Yes. Of course.
Captain's Pod, Stardate 2412-36.8. Welcome aboard the Starship Enterprise, and thank you for joining us on our continuing voyages through the final frontier. I'm your Captain Ian Whittington, and with me as always, she has no idea how annoyed I am by the amount of mines it would take to actually surround the entirety of Federation space. It's Ambassador Danae.
Wow.
Is that true?
This is a very unique title that you've given me, because usually it's about me, and this time it's about you.
No, that's the equivalent of accepting an award and then using it to make a political speech. That was this was my platform to just hammer home how much I hate the plan and how impossible the lack of explanation, because there is no way to explain it. It's not just a moon, a planet, a solar system. It is multiple star systems spread across the vastness of space. I can't even fathom how many or how strong the signal is between each of them. And the thing is, it has to be many because of the amount of space that each mine destroys. It has to be enough to, like, destroy enough to make it impossible. It's just blah. Anyway, Ambassador, how are you this week? That's what I've been thinking about this week.
Wow.
Yeah.
You've been thinking about that for days and days.
Yeah, absolutely days. Yep.
I'm thinking about, like, how much I don't want to clean the bathroom and, like, the yard cleanup and stuff, because spring is springing and I look outside and everything is growing, and I'm thinking, wow. The great thing about snow is that none of this matters. You know, you don't go outside. You don't see it all.
None of it matters, period. We make some of it matter.
It does when you live in a neighborhood where you have literal fees if you don't keep your yard.
We have invented that, exactly.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I like the amenities of my neighborhood. I do fear retaliatory neighbors who might, like, decide to report me for not knowing what to do with this grass problem. So that's what I spend my time thinking about. But you know what? You do you.
Yeah.
You,
I have,
think
no
about
fear
that,
because I have some fight in me, and I'm looking for a fight at the minute. And if it's about grass, so be it.
Like, you can kind of, like, redirect your Federation space angst.
You think this grass is bad? Imagine how many mines it takes to surround Federation space.
You may also make it to where no one wants to talk to us again, and that might just be fine.
That may also be a bonus. Ambassador, it is the season finale of Starfleet Academy season one. We left on a bit of a cliffhanger. How are you feeling going into this week's resolution and the end of the season?
I'm sad. I really have enjoyed this show.
Me too.
And I am aware of strong opinions of dislike based on, like, the conversations that we've had. But speaking for myself, I've really had a great time with this show, and I'm very much enjoying the characters enough that it feels a bit Firefly to me, where there's sort of this unique camaraderie and I just want to hang out with them longer. And I feel like we're just kind of hitting a stride with them in a way. And I wish we had more time before we have to take a break and then come back and try to remember what we liked about them and things like that. But I did manage to, although I'm not on social media, I do have what I would call essentially a ghost Facebook profile, where I restarted for Iris stuff for, like, her schools and her clubs that only really communicate on Facebook. And then mostly I just use it for Facebook Marketplace. but I couldn't help myself. And I have watched some shorts, and I apparently have watched too many Star Trek shorts because now I get fed Star Trek things.
Yeah,
and
you do.
So I've had to be really careful for the first time to not be spoiled on Starfleet Academy stuff. And I haven't, which is great. But the reason I was talking about it is because I have been able to like see some positive stuff about it. So I know that there's negative stuff out there, but I think because I'm enjoying it, like it somehow knows that I am. So I'll see heartwarming things about behind the scenes production pictures and, you know, somebody hugging another person on set or the person who plays Jaden, you know, to camera with like smiling in the makeup chair.
Yeah.
That's another thing that's kind of unique to me on this watching experience. Or before in any show, I didn't have any sort of real time connection with the show. And this time I'm liking it so much that I've kind of enjoyed being able to read about it later. But I do have to be really careful for spoilers. Like I cannot do that again because I feel like by the time I get to next time, it'll be feeding me the algorithm that's like, here's what's happening next week, like 5 days in
advance.
Here's
10 things that you missed. No, I haven't even watched it yet to miss. You don't know what I missed because I haven't seen it yet.
Here's 10 things that you're going to miss when it comes out next week.
Yeah, exactly. The general like kind of soup of feedback that I've picked up online when I put aside the trolls is generally really positive, and that this is a step in the right direction. There's definitely some missed story beats and frustrating story stuff that they've done, as there is with everything. There's some swings that they've taken they've missed, but the consistency is like, at least we're taking some swings and generally they land. And more than anything, the characters and the actors are incredible. Like, I've loved them, and that's where I've really like sunk in, is that I like all of these individuals.
Yeah,
I love being with these people. And that's so much of the battle. You watch season one of TNG, no one really likes that season, but they do like the characters and they're connecting with
exactly.
them.
Exactly.
So that's the common thing is that TNG doesn't get good until season three.
Mm-hmm.
That is 50 episodes of not being very good. We're not
crazy.
Even giving them 10. Like,
it's
Strange
wild.
New Worlds. Strange New Worlds will have 46 episodes total. That is all they will get. That is wild. And it is just...
It's a nice perspective reminder.
It really, really is. And it's amazing that we get anywhere close to the amount of connection that we do to this many characters over 10 hours as well. Not just a few of them. Like, we're talking about a dozen characters here that are even Kelrick. I'm fond of Kelrick. I like hanging out with him.
Who's that?
The warmongerer.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They have a way of just doing these little subtle things. Our brain fills in the places where we don't have to do too much time with warmonger Kelrick to get kind of an idea of what his personality is. Just enough. Like, we know that he's an eccentric collector of tea.
Yes,
we
he gets
know
very
that he's
sweaty
OCD.
When he's stressed.
Yeah. Yes. And we know just enough. We didn't have to spend a ton of time with him. So yeah, they've done a lot with a robust cast, a lot to tie in. It did a lot of heavy lifting with introducing you to this Burn world. For those that didn't know about that, I still feel like I'm kind of caught up on the important things. And I think it's super smart. I think it's some of the best storytelling for me that I have seen in some Star Trek. Because, you know, like with Strange New Worlds, I don't have to do a lot of thinking about where we are because it's such a familiar place and time. It's the cowboy world of Star Trek, you know, we're just exploring and the rules are a little loosey-goosey and we just have
Kirk
kind of
kill
a more,
3,000 people.
More simple approach. The Vulcans are Vulcans and the Klingons are Klingons. You know, there's just there's a lot of known history there. It's really fun to have that diverse tapestry, that sort of quilt vibe of things folding in on themselves, and that the Vulcans are now this and that, and that the Klingons are almost extinct. It makes me uncomfortable because it's pushed my version of these stories to like a point where I'm a newbie again in a way. So, but then there's this, again, familiarity that they're bringing back with Starfleet Academy of it kind of being more like a military and a team, and then the science behind it, reinventing that key part of Starfleet. And I really have liked that. And you said something about like they've taken some big swings and they've missed some. And I think about like what that would be for me. As for me, if I was to reflect on this series and go, where did it miss? It's just one episode that kind of missed for me. And that was where they all had that shore leave episode.
The wedding episode.
Yeah.
That's one of my big misses. Yeah.
But maybe for someone else, it wouldn't be because they really enjoy that character. But it looks stunning. It's sassy. There's good comedic timing. There's great characters. There's familiar characters. There's new characters. The prosthetics are incredible.
Well, hang out for the end of the episode because we're going to do a quick rundown of all of the episodes in the season. Not like a detailed what happened, just to pick our individual star of the season. This is going to be our Fleet Admiral Five Pippa episode.
Do we have to agree?
No, it's going to be one each. It's going to be individual. No, I'm not going to force us to agree.
I think we should agree.
No, because I don't want to agree with your favourite. I won't back down. So I think we need to pick our own one.
Oh boy.
If we want a resolution.
You already know your favourite.
No, I just
it
know what it
could be this episode.
It could, exactly. Could be this episode, probably not. It's going to be hard to beat the Cisco episode, to be honest.
Spoiler.
So last week we left with Caleb and his mother finally being reunited on the planet Ukek, Braca surrounding the Federation and trapping the Athena on the outside of Federation space. The Athena has been forced to leave her wings behind and flee three Venari Rahl ships with the cadets on board, Tig, the Doctor, obviously Captain Kitty.
And that's pretty much it, right?
And I think
Jaden and Princess Buttercup.
Oh, Jaden and Tarima are on there as well.
God, I hope the audience doesn't hate me for just never naming these characters.
At this point, the ones that are still with us love it.
This is the one reason that we don't have
the people that we're going
to
shed.
The one reason that people don't listen to the show is because Danae won't get her shit together.
You know what? We don't need those people. It's fine. So yeah, that's basically where we're at, Ambassador. What's going to happen in the season finale? How does shit get resolved or not?
I think we're going to obviously see the Athena be reunited with its wings. We have to have that. There's, like you said, there might be like a mushroom situation, this mycelium network kind of vibe.
I mean,
to
they've
get
got to
into,
say something about the discovery question.
Hopefully they do. So I'm guessing we're going to have the crew that is on the Athena currently come up with a plan, enact said plan, get said wings, which are going to be part of whatever needs to happen.
Yeah,
and
she's
then
not leaving her ship behind.
We have a lot to resolve in this episode.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to be ending with everybody's alive and happy and well, and we're not killing anybody, because that's what I want it to be. Your prediction is people are going to actually die in this episode.
Yeah, no, I think Captain Kitty dies. I think Nurse Braca dies. I think the mom dies. And I think everyone else is fine. And that forces Caleb to stay
with the academy.
Yeah. That's my big, bold, sweeping prediction. Everything else will be resolved in its general Star Trek-y way. The bombs will be disarmed. The neutron flow will be reversed. And the Omega will be found inert because of mushrooms.
The Omega will be alphaed.
Yes. Or betaed.
I don't know how that works, actually. I do wonder if we're going to mess with some timey-wimey-ness. I do wonder if that's going to be a way to just kind of quickly delete.
Yeah, we haven't really done any time travel stuff in this season, so that would be an interesting cop-out, to be honest.
It could be like an easy way to just quote-unquote fix stuff, but you wonder what the show is setting up for the future.
At least one more season.
Because whatever they do is setting the stage for whatever might come next. And I think as a series, I wonder that if Star Trek kind of as a whole is trying to make space for the next amount of content. So I think stabilizing the environment for the next set of writers and content creators to come in and be able to play needs to happen. We know we're going to have another Starfleet Academy season, right?
Yep. So they finished filming it.
I think that is going to continue to follow our favorite people through their next year, maybe even getting into command by the end of the series and kind of saying goodbye and watching them sort of go off on their own, you know, individual career paths. But for this particular one, they do have some resolutions to get to. Obviously, Federation space needs to be cleared up somehow. The mom stuff, like you said, we got to clear Caleb up, or we're going to have to, you know, have some resolution. So I'm going to guess it's going to be a lot of action and potentially some emotion, and everyone's going to kind of settle into their confidence of who they're going to be inside of Starfleet Academy. I don't know that I have a very specific prediction, but I do wish that they would consider amplifying and figuring out how to let Tarima use her abilities fully, because I still am not quite understanding if that she's so strong that it'll kill her. But from an evolutionary standpoint, I don't understand how that makes sense. Like,
well, there's always outliers. There's always mutations.
Like, so she's just like the extreme.
She's not the norm. She's okay. An extreme. Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. Just hyperthyroidism, but for her brain, for her midichlorians. In her brain. I'm going to piss someone off. Okay, then before I say anything else, let's go into the holodeck to watch the final episode of the season. We'll see you in 10 Forward for a full debrief. Two to beam out. Welcome to 10 Forward, the part of the show where we grab something from the replicator and share our immediate thoughts and feelings on the episode we just watched together. Most important question first, Ambassador, what would you like from the replicator?
Just a quick chemistry lesson on how shit blows up and what color.
And the name of the element was?
Elementium.
No, but close. Without looking at your notes.
Oh, I'm not going to remember. Do you know how many days it's been since we watched this?
Yeah, it's been a couple days. We broke our format again. It's been a couple days.
Listen, we are doing our best to churn out our content. And we can't do it in a timely, consistent fashion anymore. No. So we're shoving it in between folding socks and running to school events.
Yes.
It's very boring. You don't need to know about that stuff.
Strontium.
All you need to know is that the cat and the dogs are very happy.
They are very, very happy. I would like... What am I going to have?
Is it strontium?
I just said strontium.
I thought you said strand.
What?
They said strontium.
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 Yeah.
I would like a...
Like, what? Did you hear me? Yes, I heard you. I just want to make sure I spelled it correctly in my notes.
Accent?
I'm such a nerd.
Such a nerd. Oh, I want a slightly used mobile emitter.
When it reappears in this worn fashion, but it could have reappeared pristine.
Well, because it got exotic, mattered, particled, dissolved.
No, just because... Like, you're reforming a shape and you could do whatever you want.
He could have repaired it as well.
Yeah. It's like you could patch the jeans, the shirt, but the whole, you know, it tells a story or something.
The interesting thing about the Doctor's mobile emitter, and I'm just going to do one of my sentences now, is that it comes from the 2800s. So we're in 3195 now. It came from the future, from Voyager's perspective, which is 300 years in the past. So the wild thing is that the Doctor has now overtaken the century that the mobile emitter came from.
He said he was like over 1,000 years old.
It is over 1,000 years old because it got sent back in time to... It didn't get sent back in time. It's based on technology from the future that was sent back to the 1990s. The Doctor got it and then travelled it back to the 2300s. But it was brand new then. So now it's like 1,000 years old. But that the emitter has traveled some legs. It's done some miles.
They just don't make technology like they used to.
They don't make it like they're going to.
Oh, right. Of course. Yes. Of course. You're so
I'm
proud.
So proud of that.
You're so proud of yourself.
That was amazing. That works on so many levels. I love it. Ambassador. Give us a synopsis of the finale of Starfleet Academy, season one, if you please.
Right. Great thinking. Definitely should do that. When last we left off, the angry mommy sees Captain Kitty and thinks, I'm going to kill her. And this episode picks up basically right there. A little bit of a flashback, but just right there. And Mama does not kill Captain Kitty, but will Mama kill her by the end? Will she dance on her grave? Turns out the power eventually shifts to the mama when Captain Kitty is stolen away by Noose Praka Praka and takes them to the wings, the atrium, where everything looks different. Why? Because we can't not wreck a set in a finale.
Can't do it.
We must see it in chaos. We must see the tree on fire. We must see everything being spray painted. We must see rubble upside down and turned into a podium, because nothing screams new order except for alleyway chaos.
There you go.
Boom, boom, boom. All these people come from all over the galaxy to watch Noose Nas put together this amazing
Barack Obama.
Yes. Put together a trial where Captain Kitty has to defend essentially the entire Federation. But it turns out the one person that's going to tell whether she lives, dies, whatever's, is Mama Bear herself. And how will it resolve? Turns out Caleb has just as much skills to change anybody's mind as we ever thought he did.
I think it's on a technicality the Federation is saved.
How is it actually saved?
Some bullshit.
The doctor becomes one with the ship, gleans some knowledge, still confused about that, glues in the shoes, and the boom boom doesn't woom boom ba-doom. Everything is super happy in the end, and we're all looking out of the lower decks window as a new dawn rises for the future of the Federation. But there's actually no dawn, it's just a star in the distance, but you know what I mean. The end.
Good job, Ambassador.
That was harder than I thought.
Yeah, it's a weird one. It's a weird episode. We're gonna continue the way we've been doing this the whole season.
Almost the whole season.
Mm-hmm. There's a couple that we should re-record those episodes.
Oh sure, yes. Let's do that.
And we're gonna pick three big points each, and then some sentences to clear our consciences, mainly me, because I can't not talk about some stuff. And then at the end of the episode, we will give our super hyper fleet admiral favorite episode of the season pippage. So one episode will get 5 pips. But until we get to all of that, Ambassador, what's your first point? What's your first big thing you want to talk about in this episode?
Well, sometimes we go over our overall feelings about it, and I feel like I kind of just need to say that this is my least favorite episode, hands down.
Woof!
And
why?
We didn't record straight away, and I was kind of glad because I was really
just
frustrated.
Just gonna be spiteful.
Yeah, and so I've had like a little bit of distance from it, and I'm still pretty underwhelmed, and I don't know how to get out of it, or even if I need to. But
you don't need
to.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
For this one, that although I did not enjoy this episode, it has not ruined the season, which
exactly.
is a good thing to say.
Yeah.
Because sometimes finales, when they tank, it can really...
Oh, it really can.
Yeah, and it feels personal. Like, I've invested so much time.
Why did you make this shit just to annoy me?
And so I don't feel that way. I really do think fondly about this season, but this one got me.
I'm fascinated because I feel so neutral about the episode. There are moments that I'm like, ha, cool, Star Trek things. The rest of it does very little for me, but not even enough to evoke anger or like disappointment. It's just, I'll forget about this, which is, it's really interesting because it doesn't have to go out with a bang. It doesn't have to go out 1,000% the most devastating, incredible finale. So that's not what I'm saying. It was a very meh ending for me. And I think mostly because it backed itself into this galaxy ending corner that it really didn't need to. Like, it's got some cool stuff to say, but it's the big firework display it's setting off is mundane and distracting at the same time, but distracting from the points that it's actually trying to make for me.
I think there's a belief that you have to do something that bookends and keeps people around. And it used to be like a will they, won't they situation. Like, storytellers used to love it being, are they going to hook up? And that's what would keep you around at the very lowest denominator area. And then without that, it's now these, like you said, these world-ending bookends, and they have to answer these questions. And I think that my query is, could we have answered that question and still ended on something that didn't like leave me with a stale cracker vibe,
mm.
you know, because they have shown, and by they, I mean the writers, they've shown and the producers and everything, they've shown such an ability to have some fun and do like unique storytelling. I guess I don't mind that it was a, like, it has to be a big swing because of the stakes that they've done. And it is interesting world building at the end of the day, the idea that the Federation is smaller, that our beloved aliens are either extinct or something has happened. Like, there's just this really interesting world that they've like introduced.
Oh, the 3100s are great.
That doesn't go away for me. But like, no. This episode for me kind of sped through too much and then also didn't do enough to make me go, oh, that felt good. It was more like, what just happened?
I guess we're where you need us all to be.
Right, for the second season. And that's great. Let's get there. And this is just like that weird thing that happened once where your mom tried to tell the entire universe that Captain Kitty didn't deserve to live anymore. And
and I guess she's just free to go. I guess they're cool.
Let's get into it. So I do want to say, like, my points are almost more discussional about, like, what has clung with me is the stuff that annoys me, unfortunately.
Do it. That's fine. I'm going to have some positives. So don't fret it. Unleash.
How about mom's emotional 0 to 100 for like, yeah, this is your home now.
She's so okay with Starfleet now.
It was such a leap for me that it just sort of undid a little, like, okay, yes, there's this little wink and nod between the two because obviously mom gets to see that her son is a passionate Starfleet kid and that there's something good. And like, I do like when Star Trek will kind of have that episode that talks about what Starfleet's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
Starfleet Academy did it a lot because it's sort of resetting the importance of this stage of the rebuilding.
Why are we bringing back Starfleet?
And it's usually through Captain Kitty's voice. And now it's through Caleb's voice.
Yeah.
And I'm just watching it going, yeah, but I could take it both ways as the mom. Like this mm-hmm. is the first time I've had food and water and a place to stay, that I've had friends and I've laughed, mom.
It's amazing how good something feels when you're well-bedded, well-rested, and you've got buddies and stuff. Like, it could very easily, from her point of view, feel like a cult. Like,
and that was
even with him saying, I love it here, I'm happy.
They did such a great job world building that I don't believe anybody should be like, yay, Starfleet still. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Uh-huh.
But it was the way that they couched this sort of flip is that, you know, Starfleet isn't as evil as Nuss says. Like, there's some stuff revealed about his backstory that showcases that this sort of, we hate Starfleet because they pick and choose who lives and dies. And then Captain Kitty gets to like defend what actually happened. And
yeah,
then
that's one perspective, or you could look at it this way.
Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that mom should immediately be relieved that her son is joined this group of people that has represented nothing but like pain and heartache for her life, for a lot of people, for a lot of planets. And yes, some levity was brought with Captain Kitty defending kind of what was going on and just how serious it was. But I still had a hard time just going, wow, mom is like really okay with leaving her son once again at the academy and not, like, they're going to spend the summer together.
Yeah.
And then he's going to go back to the academy. Yeah. And I don't know.
The only way I can reconcile it is that the crazy thing is that he was 6. He's now 21, I believe. She doesn't know him. She has not known him 3 times longer than she's known him. So like, I think there would be a patronizing element for her to assume that she still knows best. Still knows best for him. So I think there's got to be some, I guess I have no choice but to trust you. I don't have the right to really influence you too much now. Like, we're glad that each other are alive. It sucks what you had to go through. But you seem happy at Starfleet, but it's still the, no matter what, it's still the being okay with Starfleet. Like, I don't know how you get past those scars. And so
Apparently it seems pretty quickly. Yeah. And if they had had a moment where Mama was like, I just met you again, I refuse to lose you, but if this is where you're going to spend, you know, your educational time, meet me at this planet every summer. and we will spend our time together because I can't be here, but I love you and I see that you're safe. I see that you're educated. I see, you know, your passion, but fuck Starfleet. And that's just how I'm always going to feel. I would have appreciated that more than her standing in the renovated.
It felt gross, didn't it? Her standing in the Athena.
Yeah. Okay. Stand in the Athena while it's still on fire. I maybe would be like.
Yeah, but no, the remodeled, like, everyone's end of term. Woohoo. Let's go. Presidential dinner. It was a very jarring conclusion.
Yeah. I maybe would have believed it if there was somebody in the corner that had their hand on a phaser and was glaring at her like. And she did it under duress, you know? I think I would believe that more. But here's the truth is, her performance was fantastic.
No, Tatiana Maslany is great.
Yeah, when she was angry and emotional, it was great. I also don't know that I needed to have a whole trial to rehash the mom versus mom.
Yeah, but Star Trek loves a trial.
But they do love a trial.
They love a trial.
So maybe because of that trial, she was able to be heard, and that kind of helps to give into this compressed sort of feeling of things shifting. But instead it kind of felt like one heartfelt speech from my son and, wow, this campus is super lovely and you should stay here forever. I don't know.
And the hook of Nuss being wrong about how his colony was destroyed. Like the fact that that was wrong and that pilot died because of Nuss as well. It's kind of like, okay, Starfleet might suck, but Nuss sucks more. But that doesn't make Starfleet good. It doesn't make Starfleet okay. But it's like that all compounded so that she experienced some kind of guilt and remorse. And, you know, maybe if I'm wrong about Nuss and I'm wrong about what I've done, maybe I'm wrong about Starfleet and it's not so bad. But the whole, like, the thing, the point that I feel like was really missed by this episode and could have been pretty cool.
Is this your point?
To explore. No, it's not. This is my bouncing off of your point.
Okay.
Is that this is going to sound wild. It's not about Starfleet. It's about the people. So Starfleet can be whatever ideals you want it to be, but if they're being misinterpreted, misused, like Nuss was misusing his claims of like transparency and democracy, like he was misusing that. Anybody can misuse Starfleet. So I feel like the message should be the people. So it's like, we have got better people in Starfleet. We are coming together under this banner of coming together. Like, honestly, it needs rebranding. You need to stop calling it Starfleet because it's not the same institution that it was during the burn and immediately after the burn. So this is the first time I felt really disconnected from this is Starfleet, this is what we are. Because that falls apart when Starfleet did abandon Beta Z. The Federation did abandon the galaxy and then hid. So it for me, like, the difference now is that people like Nala, Vance, Caleb, the new cadets, they are the people that are making this community good, regardless of what it's called.
I feel like in previous episodes, that's sort of been Nala's chant, is this is the future. We need to give this is the representation of the future. And I also feel like this episode let Nala be the voice of why Starfleet couldn't perform at optimum level and be the heroes. They had to bring some people body bags, and they kind of went more into how difficult it was that they know that everyone was in need, but that the all reaching out had to go critical first, and it wasn't a personal decision. But it is still hard to understand why Beta Z was abandoned. Those things are they're kind of a bit lost on me. So I understand what you're saying. Shall we move on to your point?
Yeah, I'm going to be positive. I really am. My first point and my happiest point is flipping Tig Notaro, Jet Reno. What a she is my favorite Starfleet captain that isn't a captain.
Dude, I thought she was going to die. As I was watching it.
Oh, that would have wrecked me. I did not see that. I wouldn't have seen that coming.
Well, we kept thinking someone was going to die, right? And they're in that area. She and Caleb are in that area together.
Oh, in the little warp core.
And she's giving a pep talk to a kid. And I'm thinking, this is when it happens.
You're dead. So a panel blows up in her face. It would have wrecked me. Like, that would have been shocking.
I kept thinking, is this part of the arc of the show is her helping Caleb kind of get through this last push of who he is as a person. She gives him this insightful wisdom about, I asked who you were the first time and now I see who you are. You are the kind of person that turns around and goes back. And I thought, oh no, this is how Disney kills parents, you know?
Yeah, this is it.
So is this going to happen?
No, it would have had to be at the beginning of the story. Disney only kills parents at the beginning of the story.
Yeah, that's true.
She was great. I loved the way she led. I thought it was a really cool choice to still, I mean, the courage and the fortitude, I'm deliberately taking the balls out of my language. Fortitude to still use it as a teaching experiment, a teaching opportunity.
Yeah.
Like everyone is being taught and like, okay, what's your answer, cadets? What's your answer? What you gonna do? Okay, you screwed that up. I screwed up 17 times and I wrecked 4 shuttles. Don't worry about it. Get back in the saddle. She never loses her cool. She is so confident and I get that confidence from her. Like I feel like I can do anything because she's just getting on with it. And there's this like monotone to her delivery that I love. She's like, I got to go down to the warp core and I got to fix that now. So I'm going to do that. You do this, you do this, you do that. I'm going to be in the warp core. Caleb, you're with me. And she gives everybody a pep talk when they need to give it. She also gets some like really fun lines of dialogue that are like historic Star Trek lines. So when she, they're questioning the plasma, they're like, we're venting plasma. Like we have to fix that first. She's like, no, don't worry. That was fake. It was sourced we were sourcing the goose. That's a line that Spock gives in one of the movies.
Oh.
So they're trying to play dead and he's describing something like deliberately being over the top. It's like sauce for the goose, Commander, and it's just a really like slick line.
Oh,
and
that's a great just to
give
line.
It to Jet is just
that's
it's
so
beautiful.
Fun.
Yeah, it's so fun.
It's also fun. Those used to be the big things, right? The plasma leaking, the warp core going up, and now it's so casual. Yeah. I remember being like, oh no, if the warp core is going down, it's not like going to a little hallway and going into some systems checks and just making sure everything's balanced. It's a huge room where Geordi has to put a whole half wall down just to get out.
Like, he's going to have to roll under it.
That used to be the thing. And now it's such a casual
thing. What does that wall do? What does that wall do if the warp core is venting anything?
It looks fucking great. It's so dramatic. That's what it is. But now they're like just in this super different, way more high-tech situation, and they're just running their tests and talking and running tests at the same time. And now the big thing is this part of space that might be blown to shit.
And just there was, it had the humor that I needed as well, because she gives the orders and she's like, do you hear me? Like, sound off. And then half of them say, yes, Commander. Half of them say, yes, Captain. She's like, not a captain.
Yeah, I like that.
That's not my title.
Yeah, and that was really fun.
There's always this build up. It's super cringe for me. It's super cringy finding your warp thing.
I was gonna say I loved hers. How
loved
did
it because I didn't know it was coming.
No, she just said
didn't have a clue.
Make the sparkly lights.
It was, now show me pretty streaks of light.
Yeah,
and I that's love that. Exactly. Even it. That is self-aware because mm-hmm. I often wondered like the what's interesting is that you don't have the pretty streaks of light that come out of the back of the engine anymore. That's just a motion picture, not motion picture. It's the original series movies that really went over the top with that. They kind of stopped doing it because it was really fucking expensive, but they did it in the motion picture and they kind of tied their hands. I was like, well, we kind of showed off a bit there, so I guess we're going to have to do it. But in TNG, it was just flash of light because that's a lot cheaper. Even in Voyager, it's just a flash of light. So they kind of like phased that out. So from their perspective, it's the stars going by, I imagine, are the pretty streaks of light. But as a meta thing, it's the warp trail that comes out of the
That's
back of
fun.
The... It's just, it's great, and there's no build-up to it. There's no, like, what should my phrase be? Because in Discovery, it was like, what's your thing going to be, Burnham? Well, what's your thing going to be? You need a thing. Everybody needs a thing when they go to warp. And it was the first time I really saw Star Trek be super self-aware in like a really obvious way. It's like, oh, they know that that's a catchphrase thing. Like they know that, which is weird because Kirk didn't have one. And Pike kind of got one in one of the movies and they carried that on to the TV show, hit it. And Lower Decks, they talk about it as well.
Make it so.
Everyone's got to, yeah, make it so would be, well, that's weird. Engage was Picard's. Make it so was more do
command.
This job.
Yeah,
okay. Command. Make it happen, do it. But it was engage for warp. And so I wasn't expecting Jet to get one, and then she just drops it, and it's the best one ever. So
I'm really glad that you countered my mental anguish with this episode, because she really was the best.
She is the best. She is the MVP. Mm-hmm. I need a Jet Reno TV show right flipping now. She kept me going in this episode, and all of the that is linked into the repair stuff on the ship as well. Specifically, not the Doctor nonsense, specifically her stuff, like her rallying the troops, rallying her crew. One problem after, like, I love so much that Caleb is like, we have to save my mom and we have to save Nala. Like, that's it. And Jet's just like, we can't do shit in this ship. Like, one problem at a time. Fix the next thing in front of you. The next thing in front of us is the ship not blowing up. Then it's scanners so that we know where we're going. And like, do you follow me? Like, we can't jump to anything until we fix the next problem in front of us. And I love that so much. Like, you can like be crushed by the big picture calamity and then miss that the first step to fixing that is to tie your shoes up. Like, get that done. It's such an engineer's way of looking at it. And I think engineers make incredible captains. So anyway, that'll be the gushiest I get about the episode, but yeah. she is such a highlight, and I think she makes that crew even more enjoyable as well. Like, I think she ties them together even better than Nala does.
It is the best episode in the series of showcasing what it's like to have Starfleet on a ship when shit goes awry. We had some practices that we saw them go through, some like quick motions, but the episode turned into the Nuss coming and stealing, doing the Nuss thing, you know, like the whole ruse to make the big calamity of what were those bat people coming to them.
Oh God, I forgot about that the Mizuki Miyazaki.
Yeah, and we were thinking like, oh, is this going to be when the cadets learn to do ship stuff or away team stuff? You know, really like out there in the world and. We didn't get a lot of the educational aspect. We didn't get to be in the classroom very much. And this was
perhaps naive of us to think that.
This is an in the classroom, but also at the helm episode. Yeah. And it kind of in a way reminds me of maybe if you're like watching ER, but or like more like Grey's Anatomy, I guess. Like the vibe of you're in a high stakes situation, but you're in a learning, or the pit. You're in a learning.
Yeah, teaching hospital.
Teaching hospital. So. So
yeah, like Scrubs was as well.
Somebody is going to be talking you through this situation, this surgery, this trauma, and we got to see Jet walk the kids through it like that. And it felt really fun because that is what makes it Starfleet Academy specifically.
It's also
I would have liked
Trek.
That a lot more.
It's kind of what makes it Star Trek as well. Like, that could have easily been a TNG B-plot where they're back on board trying to fix the ship.
I guess I should say, now that I'm thinking about that, just that part of the episode, it's my favorite. It's maybe one of my favorite on the ship sequences, because it did have really fun beats to it with the kids like all figuring out how to really sit inside of their skill set. You know, we get to see Genesis sit down in the captain's chair. We get to see
Raimi nice.
Like not actually crash a ship, but he almost did. And then we get to see Sam turn into the computer genius. We get to see Jaden walk out of the room one time.
You're gonna be heading up medical, just looking after all of that.
Bye, Jaden.
See you later, buddy.
But it was the best representation of them on a ship, and it does make me want to see more of that.
Yeah.
If they could do more of that in season two, I'd be happy.
Yeah, me too. I don't know what they're gonna do with season two, but they've done it. Whatever it is they're going to do, it's fascinating that they've wrote, filmed everything before season one was out and like reviewed, or like, and I know you shouldn't necessarily make huge big changes because of reviews and stuff, but anything that they wanted to learn from audience reaction, they can't learn for season two because they've already done it. It's fascinating.
Yeah. I like it. Do your thing.
All right, Ambassador, what's your number two?
It's mostly just a big question. What the fuck is going on with the doctor? I have so many questions. So, how is...
won't be able to help
Is there a relation between him becoming the ship and discovering the secret to solving the problem of the bomb bay?
Good question. E-bomb bay! Sorry. That's Black Panther.
Are they related to each other?
It went so fast.
So fast.
I'm not fully sure I know what happened, other than they merged.
Like, and this was frustrating. It felt like a speed run through the science of stuff. And it was sacrificed against this sort of trial where just the same shit is being talked about over and over again. And that's what was frustrating for me, is every time we go to the trial, it's like,
it's all ground we covered in the Nuss episode.
This is, so much. This is the mom's opportunity to, like, I guess, join the conversation, but she hasn't been here the whole time. And the only reason I'm invested is because I keep knowing that she's going to show up at some time. That's it. You know, they've all moved on. They moved on so quickly that we've seen so much more time with the cadets and the teachers and these other interesting adventures going on with, you know, Princess Powers and Sam becoming a new thing. Like, that's really great time spent. And I would rather explore those things than feel like we're handcuffed back to bringing this actor in who's incredible, but rehashing so many emotional beats that take away from explaining how the doctor even figured it out, or
it's kind of all stuff covered in episode one.
How the cadets figure out the secret word code, or how that relates. Even the pacing it felt so off to me at the end, where Sam is just getting to break the code in the brink of time, and the music is swelling, and then it's cut back over to the trial, and it's cut back over here. And sometimes the cutting back and forth can build that tension up, but there was none here. We know that nothing is going to blow up. And so leaning into that storytelling trope reminds me again, this is a bookend thing. And so I'm just checked out. But how did the doctor learn any of that? How did he become the ship? He became the ship to go into the deflector dish, to be able to push out into the galaxy in all directions a hologram of a broken, blown up ship to, I guess, trick all the bad guys and then wait the perfect amount of time. But none of that would have been... And also the sensors that would have been scanning for life. Like, he basically became a cloak.
Yeah, it was... Magic happens. I'm really lost, honestly. Like, I don't know why he needed the mobile emitter to interface with... Okay, best as I can understand it, the Doctor's program is still housed inside the mobile emitter. Athena absorbed... That's the only way the Athena can fully absorb his program. And that's important because he is the best hologram to ever hologram and can create a physical illusion the Athena that takes all of the punishment, explodes, while the real Athena is kind of protected from that and completely masked. But all of that is a means to getting the Doctor confused. And I think the reason is that the Doctor has that knowledge. He's not just got medical knowledge. He's like Data. He has tons of knowledge. So he knows about the Rubicon stuff.
Wouldn't he have said it before?
He didn't know that he need... Oh, no, that's a good point. Why wouldn't he have said it before? Something unlocked. When he merged with Athena, it unlocked something in his brain, but then scrambled his language.
There's an opportunity there to say more about that.
There really is. So how do they get onto that? No, because it was the gluons and the particles and stuff. So
the glue on the shoe.
I think he had an epiphany somehow and then was struggling to communicate it.
I didn't mind how that was acted out. Just imagine just only being able to speak in gibberish for a time, and you're still you, and he's just standing by the window going, okay, every time I talk, that can't work. How am I going to get this over to them?
Write it down.
But if he writes in gibberish too, same problem.
Access the computer. Access a monitor. like, bring up a picture of gluons and Rubicons.
It's really how frustrated I felt, and I just haven't been able to stop it, that it's such a rushed moment, and I don't know. It made me kind of annoyed, but suddenly science did fix everything, you know, so.
No, I'm with you, and it's almost like the episode knew I was, like, I got really stuck on how many minds there are.
Oh, so many.
And guess what? It explained how many. It said the wall is made up of hundreds.
But that's...
Oh, no, that's not many at all.
That's not many at all.
That means it's not thousands. How is it only... Like, I was already annoyed by this, and then you went and said it was less than 999?
Oh, man.
I don't know how it is covering this much space. That is wild. And then Vance lists all of the 160 billion dead. Discovery can't come because a jump might trigger a detonation, whatever bullshit you want. But it's... And then, of course, the mines are controlled by a single signal, and then we can just interfere with that
signal. This is your next point.
And no, it's not. It's just my reaction to you. Sorry. No, but it was just the techie side resolution of the episode.
Mm.
It was so blah, blah, blah. That I felt blah, blah, blah. Like, I was just like, whatever, doesn't matter. Like, I have zero investment in this. And we talked about this off mic. Ever so briefly. When the universe is ending all of the time, it makes the universe ending not really that much of a big deal. And it's just like, you have to use it sparingly. Discovery didn't. So much doesn't. And it's just, I'm numb. I am numb to the galaxy ending. But you're not going to get another Best of Both Worlds because every single finale has to be a Best of Both Worlds.
I feel like the first question is in the creation of things like this is, well, what's at stake? And someone says, the universe.
I need more. I need to know.
It doesn't need to be the universe.
It needs to be two people.
I also really was annoyed by the number thing too, just for the record. And then, like, the image on the screen was sort of a ring around the rosies with everything on the inside. And we all think the same thing, which is space.
Three-dimensional.
You can go above it or below it. They needed to show a globe. They did show it, kind of.
I kind of give them a pass on that.
Only said it's a few hundred.
Hundreds? Why did you say hundreds? Say millions. Just say millions.
Why not?
All right, my second point is, I just want to talk about the trial element of it. It's very, very interesting to put it in the form of a trial, because some of Star Trek's most iconic moments, Measure of a Man, The Undiscovered Country, The Drumhead, take place in the courtroom setting. I mean, the encounter at Farpoint, the beginning of TNG, and All Good Things, the end of TNG, both courtroom trial things as well. Big show trials ran by Q that are ridiculous and stacked and corrupt. So if you're gonna do it again, if you're gonna make another pizza, this has got to be a really yummy pizza. And it just didn't work for me. Like, the overall trial was just a bit of a miss for me. The only bit that resonated in my brain was how obvious Bracker was being about, this is democracy, you get a voice, and Starfleet are the evil ones, you come to me, you ask for democracy, and I'll give it to you. And that is clearly very resonant with current affairs, and it's very topical. So that felt very authentic. But like you said, and I hadn't really made this connection, it's all stuff we've heard. As much as I love Paul Giamatti, it's all stuff we've heard him say all season. There was nothing new.
There was a twist about his backstory.
We got specifics, but it didn't change anything. Like, it was, I now know specifically why you think you hate Starfleet. And I didn't get any fear. I think that's another problem. I never felt any fear for Nala or the Federation or anybody as a result of this trial.
I kind of did, because you were so convinced she was going to die.
Mm.
And I was thinking, okay, so how is this going to work? You know, are they actually going to take her out? But that's the only... That was something that I felt some tension for, I guess.
Yeah. But, Bracker forces the Federation, Nala, to represent the Federation and kind of tricks her into it. Like, If you be quiet, it looks guilty as fuck. So you have to defend the Federation, and you have to defend the Starfleet. And this gives what it really is, and I think they should have got to it sooner. What this really is an opportunity for Anish Amir to just let loose and just explode all over her. I loved her performance. Like,
yes.
Tatiana Maslany does, and I will say her name 17 different ways. Email me. The way she does manic, panic, sadness, anger in all of the shows that she's been in, Orphan Black is just incredible. She's so good at that, and she sells it, and I believe that she's a real person and she's there and doing it. So I did love her performance. I just don't love what she's saying. I just don't super connect to what she's complaining about, and then how easily she doubles back on it by the end of the episode.
My,
because of strontium
frustration, this is my point.
Your third point?
Is Nussbracker's, like, the villain logic situation, because he has been shown to be obviously eccentric and vindictive and dangerous, but he's also an incredible strategist. He heisted.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh my gosh, he's pulled off harder things than this. He's
pulled off incredibly difficult things. And this episode asks you to believe that when he discovers the bridge part of the saucer
section, yeah.
And he boards and he sees Nala with Mom, that he abandons his previous plan to showcase their drama before everybody, because that wasn't his plan beforehand. He never intended for the Athena to be on that side of the at all.
Oh, good point. Oh shit.
So his original plan was to trap them all and then showcase to the world, you know, hey, we've got the Federation and I'm willing to blow them up. I'm the one in control here. But when he saw that one of the ships was out, he had to go and look into it. He got curious, and then his bravado, his ego was like, let's have a show then. Let's put these two against each other. I think Mom is going to kill her, because so it is still a strategy, but it's hard for me to believe that he would give over any of the final say or the show or the stage to anybody other than himself. He gives it to the Mom because of their history, but it wasn't like what I thought. I thought she was going to be the secret, you know, spy agent, you know, that and she had the inside scoop and she was actually a part of them and she was lying to Caleb and they were going to.
No, it ended up being very mundane.
It was very different than that. Yeah, it was very much more like a straightforward. Nope, yeah. I told you that I wasn't and I'm not.
Which is fine. Like,
it is, but that is even more confusing to me, because Nuss hands the reins to someone that he got arrested and then broke out of jail and hasn't seen and thought was dead.
But he didn't hand any reins to her, really. She, even it, like, I think there's a 1% chance that she signs with Nala, and that 1% chance is Caleb turning up, who he assumes is dead, so it doesn't matter. And I think even if she signs with Nala, he's like, oh, that sucks. Click. I blow up the bombs. Like, he's insane. He couldn't help the opportunity to, I guess, see them have at it.
But he gave the stage, the whole universe section that was watching, he gave the attention to these two's feud, thinking that it would showcase what was wrong with the Federation.
Yeah, to exemplify what's wrong with Starfleet.
I kind of get it, but I'm also just like, all of that was just off the cuff. None of that was part of his plan.
No, it's not.
And I don't know if that's something that the strategist would do.
I want to zero in on the finale of the trial, because there was something that I liked specifically from Nala. It's difficult to end these arguments without something that just feels like a generic, impassioned plea for, like, goodness. Like, Starfleet isn't perfect, but it's the best we've got, so let's go, let's do it. Kind of a bit
masculine?
Platitudinal.
Mm.
Why masculine?
I don't know, so like, let's go, we've got this, and she was kind of more like a... It was a different approach. It was very more feminine, like motherly approach.
What I liked is she zeroes in on this pilot that died because of a heist that Bracca and Anisha, Mama, were doing. And throughout the trial, like, the focal point of the mum's ire is, you sent me and my kid, you sent me to jail, which separated us, and my kid had to go and live alone. You're the representation of Starfleet. Starfleet sent me to prison. And Nala's like, yeah, I didn't think that was the right call, but I had to do it. However, counterpoint, why were you on trial? Why did you go to jail? Because you killed a man. Your actions killed a person. Own it. Like, be honest with yourself. Could you have avoided that? Could you have stepped in and stopped Nurse? Did you have to? Yes, you're desperate. But this man, here's his name, here's where he's from, also has a kid. Never going to have a relationship with him.
His last mission cliche.
Huh?
His last mission cliche.
Oh my God, you didn't have to do it. The last mission before retirement. I was like, did you? When you were writing that, did you not see the 1,000 times that's been written before? It's just some things we need to just moratorium on the retirement thing, please and thank you. But I honestly, for some reason, I hadn't gone there. I hadn't thought about that. And I thought it was a really smart way to, instead of apologizing and saying, like, I quit and I'm sorry, own your shit. Like, take responsibility. What else do you expect? A man died. A child is orphaned. Where's his justice? Like, why should you go free because of your actions? You chose to do that. There's lots of people in staff in the galaxy that are struggling. Not all of them are heisting ships and resulting in pilots being killed. So I liked that owning your shit element of it, and the fact that Nala is practicing that as well. Like, she's owning it as well. There's a beautiful counterpoint Anisha makes, which is, yeah, you quit after you sentenced me. You didn't quit before. You kind of, and then you went to a kindergarten. You kind of landed on your feet, didn't you? Because it kind of puts Nala down a bit. Like, she's like, oh, you left Starfleet because of this. Yeah, but did you? Did you really? You still just got, like, your retirement package.
But then,
like, if you meant it, you could have quit before you sentenced me and have someone else do it.
And then Kitty says, and you could have quit before you killed somebody.
Exactly.
It's
kind of
that same circle.
That argument at the end from Nala, I found really, really satisfying. I actually found that more satisfying than Caleb coming in with the whammy.
Yeah.
And her then saying, by the way, Nurse, your colony was blown up by your father's actions, not because Starfleet bombed you. I get that you need that to turn the rest of the galaxy away from Nurse, but that own your shit argument to bring Anisha out of, I'm not saying it, I'm happy that it brought her onto Starfleet's side, but to bring her a bit of self-awareness, I really, really enjoyed that. That was some intelligent writing when you could have taken the easy way out for that and just apologized and said, Starfleet's as good as it gets. I've ended up being really positive about this episode. I need to analyze that. Okay, any sentences, Ambassador? Give us some wrap-up stuff.
Well, I think it's important to point out that we learned the real power of the weapon wasn't to make a bomb, but was actually trying to make an energy source. I think you told me that.
That's some bullshit.
And didn't you say that was kind of the intent before?
It has the potential to be an unlimited energy source.
Right.
And that's what, Voyager, the aliens were like basically nuclear fission. Like, we found it. We found the Omega particle. But the downside is that it's
extremely
deadly,
dangerous.
Like, yeah. Beyond deadly.
So Starfleet is essentially attempting to do the same thing to try to rebalance, I think, some of the devastation from the burn.
Yeah, bullshit. I mean, that's really naive to me. Like, yes, I'm sure that's number one, but you know that number two is we could use this as a weapon. Like, that's where I was kind of like on Bracker's side. I was like, yeah, no, they're using it as a weapon. This was a weapons facility. Like, Vance even says it was a top secret weapons facility. Oh, you just happened to be going for green energy at the same time?
Oh, good. What about one of your lines?
I just want to say some of the visuals, unsurprisingly, are stunning. When the Venari Ra'al turn up and attack the Athena, and the Athena's going through the nebula, dodging torpedoes, gorgeous, turns up in the gas giant and just like...
I loved that.
Rises up through the gas giant, fucking beautiful.
So pretty.
Like, I just want gas in space all the time. Just, even when the ship is taking a pounding from all of the torpedoes, I was like, that's exactly what you should do. Like, It's so annoying that the only time the bad guy kills the good guy is when you know the good guy is going to get out of it. Like, it's exactly what you should do. Fire all of the torpedoes, leave nothing to chance, decimate them. I just wish there was more stakes, but it looked gorgeous. Anything in space looks beautiful.
We kind of already covered the next line, but just for the specificity of it, we learned that Nos's father had built a flare gun, essentially, or yeah, something to attempt to really get Frontium Starfleet's bomb attention as they were traveling past their planet to go help other people. And they were all hungry and they were all in need. It was a weapon. And when Nos's father used it because of the chemicals that they were mining and all of this various things, it blew up and caused this massive destruction. Caleb was able to say that it was red because, of course, he's been paying attention in his classes. So just an interesting idea in watching Nos kind of go, no, that can't be what it really is, you know, after all that time.
Do you think he knew? Do you think he knew his dad did it, or he genuinely thought it was Starfleet?
Based on how it was acted, I don't think he knew.
Yeah, I think so as well. I don't think he knew. Which makes it all of the fucking Sherlock Holmes convenient that it was Strontium and that they had the pieces to pull together all of that. It felt a little contrived to me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
But they can't let Starfleet be the real problem.
And it already is. I kind of bought it a little bit, which is a bit dark. As far as anticlimaxes go, Princess Buttercup, Tarima, and Caleb in love.
And it feels it works. So good.
They find the ship. I think I was wanting something bigger from that.
She turned into a fucking echolocation system for fucking space, man. It can't get bigger than that. She became the Phoenix, but she didn't.
Remember what I said
last?
But
she didn't kill anybody.
No. Remember what I said? She could have popped everyone in there. It's wild. Pop Bracca before he can.
She really
pop the mine.
She really could have.
She really could have done.
I think it would have hurt. I think she knows that level of destruction would.
Worth it. 160 billion lives. Worth it.
Yep. Probably. She actually just had that speech about one life.
Yeah, she really did. Yeah. She literally did. Anything else, Ambassador?
Well, yeah. I mean, about them, we didn't see her eyes turn dark for real this time. I really didn't see it. There was no intense CGI. So I was a bit bummed about that. But I did have a point to just point out that she genuinely turned into a massive Jean Grey.
Oh, massive Jean Grey vibes, yeah.
She went Professor X and put on...
Oh, Cerebro.
She put on Cerebro.
She Cerebro'd it.
And Caleb is Cerebro. Oh, no. We can call him Cerebro.
Oh, my.
And
Cerebro.
And she scanned the fucking galaxy using his love of his mom as the... I don't even know what you call it. The guide, the benchmark, the compass point with which to find them. And then... scans her brain out there, finds them, sees shit, sends it back, and that is how they actually discover where they're supposed to go.
Yeah.
Absolutely fucking crazy.
It's crazy.
The doctor turns into the ship. She turns into Jean Grey.
For me, it's anticlimactic. Like, they've put a lot of effort into their relationship and the backwards and forwards and the will they, won't they. And in the penultimate episode, they send Caleb all the way into bastard territory. Just, you all suck. I hate you all. And then into this episode, I love you all. And I'm worried that I'm just going to be a bastard again. It's just, I didn't buy it. Like, none of that worked for me. None of that meshed together. None of that felt really good.
Yeah, I didn't mind the Caleb stuff so much, but the rest of it was pretty difficult for me. Are you upset that nobody died?
Well, I mean, my predictions were way off. Like,
yeah.
Rucker doesn't die, Kitty doesn't die, and the mother doesn't die. Doesn't mean they're all coming back next season. I'd be surprised if Nala isn't. But no one died. Really interesting. Other than our Vulcan buddy, whose name I've already forgotten.
Has died, and my streak of loving almost everything has died. And I'm sorry about that.
Sad.
Let's move on to the next part of our show.
You mean where we talk about all of the ships that turned up at the end and how great they were? There was a new Constitution class. There was the new Intrepid class.
You were so
it may
happy.
Have actually been the Voyager Ray.
You
I couldn't
were
see.
So happy.
Discovery turns up in one frame at the very, very
it's
end around Beta
so
Z.
Fun to just, watch poof, poof, ships show poof, 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 up. Let's
so many
go.
Ships. They look
Let's
so.
Go.
I love the crazy thing, like there are some advantages to bringing Discovery 700 to 800 years into the future. The thing that blew my mind was you have to sit down and redesign what starships look like 700 years into the future. And they kind of do have a branding to them. Like, they do feel like 32nd century ships, and they just look so different. I love this era of ships. I still want more shows in it. I want more shows in it. Athena's still the prettiest ship. It's beautiful. It's beautiful. All right, Ambassador. Pips for this episode.
Ooh, this will be a 2-pipper for me.
It's 2.5 for me. 2.5. And 2.5 of them go to Jet.
Yeah.
So good. She's so fucking good.
Jet's what turns this into a 2 for me.
Yeah, that's fair. Ambassador, overall for the season, what was your favorite episode of the season? What gets your Fleet Admiral 5 pips?
Well, I think we should do like a little bit of a super short episode recap. So episode 1 was when all the cadets get to Starfleet and they're wide-eyed and wary and trying to navigate new rules of personalities, right?
Well,
oh,
no.
It was a fucking crazy, like, let's explode. By the way, we've got some trauma. Caleb is this wild, insane criminal that is forced to go to the academy.
And gets a haircut. Remember he had long hair?
Oh, my God,
they
yes.
cut his hair. You remember that?
Medical
tricorder.
Like, they're all going to arrive. They're going to be like these different kinds of kids and they're going to have to learn how to get along.
Nope.
And that's not how it starts at all.
Nope. Strong start. I liked it though.
Mm-hmm. And also early on, I mean, episode 1, 2, 3, like you just kind of see their sort of relationships with each other. You've got like Remy, who I call the asshole, who I call the Transformer boy. You always say fish boy.
Yeah, he looks like a fish. We never got to see him do that again.
No.
Crazy
Cost
buried
too
lead.
Much money, I bet.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Episode 2.
Yeah, what happened in episode 2?
Beta test. So it was the debate about whether Beta Z should rejoin the Federation.
And Tarima shows her psychic Tarima abilities. Shows up. And Yeah.
Debates and love and stuff happen.
Yeah, I don't remember much else about that episode, but I think episode 3 was the first like space simulation that turned into that bat clash, right?
No, that was Come Let's Away.
Oh, was this the rivalry between the two? This was
the Vitus Reflux was the War Academy. Yeah. The rivalry and the prank war.
Episode 3.
Yeah. Episode 3.
Yeah, that was the prank war.
Yeah. With the plants.
Yes. That's it.
And the laser tag.
Mm-hmm.
Pew, 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 pew. Vox in Excelso was the Jaden episode with the Klingons and his family and him having an anxiety attack and Raimi helping him. And then he talks in front of people when they do the debate and they do it about whether the Klingons should be allowed to die or they should have this new world forced upon them. And then they have the big fake battle at the end to make it a glorious conquering of a planet.
Episode 5.
That was a good one. I like that one.
Yeah. Episode 5, was that the training exercise that went bad?
Nope. Episode 5 was Ceres Acclimation Mill. This is the Deep Space Nine episode. This is where she's talking about how she's an emissary and explores Benjamin Sisko and how he was an emissary.
Yeah.
And they have the book and Dax turns up. Teacher Dax is the one that's giving the lessons about the... unexplained mysteries of the galaxy.
And we had a little Trill recap that episode.
We do. It's amazing. I still need to do an edit that is us talking about the Trill during Discovery and Academy because I think it will be word for word the same. Next up is Come Let's Away. That's the Miyazaki training exercise. The idea
is
to get the Miyazaki back together, but they get invaded by...
Bat people.
They call in Nussbracker, but it turns out that Nussbracker planned it all. He planned the Bat People to be a big distraction so that he could steal stuff from the space station.
And during this episode, Sam is injured. That
yes.
kind of leads to Sam having to be reset eventually.
Yeah.
And it leads to a lot of trauma. This is when Princess Buttercup turns into a killer.
Yeah, she pops a lot of bat heads.
She goes into a coma after this because of the injuries that she sustains due to releasing too much power.
The next one was Cosine, which was the surprise wedding and Raimi battling with his obligations. And Genesis is a psychopath who is conning Caleb into...
That's my least favorite, maybe.
Oh, is that still the one?
It might be.
Genesis has to try to hide the fact that she forged her recommendation letters and manipulates Caleb into helping her.
I have to ask myself, like, is it, like, which episode spent more time on a storyline that I don't like
more than the other one,
you know? The space slug never came back.
The warp slug is incredible. Cosine is a weak one. It's a really, really weak one.
Life of the Stars is where Tilly returns and through theater, healing can begin as I think Tarima comes back from her month off and they kind of like all sort of have it out while Sam dies and is resurrected as a new Sam. And the doctor heals by adopting her.
Oof. So good. We get some resolution about the shit that the doctor's been dealing with as well. Good stuff. That's a strong one. And then 300th Night, which was the one we did last week, where Caleb finds his mother is on a planet, has been sending him messages. They rescue her. Shit goes sideways. The Federation gets covered in bombs. Hundreds of them.
How are we going to pick our favorite?
I've already picked my favorite.
Okay, go on. What is it?
It is, here's why I hesitate. I've got three that are
up. Oh, come on.
I've got three that are up there. The problem is none of them for me really represent Starfleet Academy. Series Acclamation Mill is the DS9 follow-up. So I love it because it's giving me some more context about Deep Space Nine. And I love the way that they did it and the way they brought Dax back. But that's all stuff about Deep Space Nine, so that doesn't feel fair. Life of the Stars is the other one, because I love the connection with the Doctor and Sam. I love that because of my connection to Voyager. And then Come Let's Away, the Miyazaki, Everything Goes Wrong. It's not about the Academy. It's an action-packed, thrill ride, fun episode of an adventuring Star Trek. None of them really represent Academy for me, but I guess that doesn't matter too much. My favorite is Come Let's Away. It is. Yeah, that's my five pipper of the season. I love what the other two did for Legacy Star Trek, but I liked what this showed Starfleet Academy can be as well, because it was a training exercise gone wrong. Great amount of action, great bad guy. Everybody got a bit to do. So yeah, that's the one that I would go back to and watch again. Yeah. How about you, Ambassador?
It's hard because you're talking about which one is the best representative of what we thought the Academy was going to be, and that might be episode 3, Vitus Reflux, because it had the rivalry and it has how much is going on between our people and really
and that's not
shows
what we're
their
asking.
Personalities.
It's not what represents it most. It's what our favorite is.
Yeah, but we know so much more about these individuals and like what they're willing to do. I had a really fun time with 300th Night.
Oh, interesting.
Right? Like, that was a fun one.
No, that's the one I didn't like.
I know, but I really did.
No, that's great. That's good.
Man, I don't know exactly. I think I had the most fun with Sirius Acclamation Mill.
Mmm, with Dax?
Because with Sam. I don't...
With Dax?
Because for me, that episode isn't about Deep Space Nine and it isn't about Dax at all. It's about Sam, who is my connection to the Starfleet story.
That's fair.
But I did have a lot of fun with just how that one was made. It had a lot of the Academy life in it. It had it from this like, super unique perspective. We got to see an alien kind of interaction with her species overseeing everything. And it had some
the big voice
telltale. And it's vying for number one along with, I think, Vox and Excelso.
Yeah, oh, it's such a good one.
And it's not just because of the shock. Like, I was shocked by the Klingons almost being extinct. That really bothers me.
8 families left.
Seeing Nala and this powerful, like, Klingon was pretty cool.
That's a really good one.
And it shows the Starfleet life because they have to debate. And Jaden takes this really unique perspective. It also shows the relationship between this crew with Raimi trying to help Jaden like calm his nerves and
the anti-toxic masculinity scene.
Yeah, exactly. They're all kind of for each other. Good. And it just has that youthful vibe and good lore going on as well. So I'm really struggling between which of those two I would watch again.
That one might be my favorite.
But because of like the modern approach to serious acclimation mill, I think I'm going to go with that one. I really enjoyed that one too, because it also had not just the, are we going to be able to bring the Klingons back? It was really kind of more firmly planted in Sam's charge as a student to become a bridge of information to her people an ambassador through the lens of a student, but and having to go to a class and learn more about who she is, about Starfleet and Star Trek lore. I think that's my favorite. I think Sirius Acclimation Mill is my number one, and number two is Vox in Excelsior.
That's a good answer. I mean, I think I might change mine. My heart, like my head is saying, come, let's away. My heart is saying other things.
Well, have two, but which one's your number one? Which one would you want to watch again today?
I mean, both of them, honestly. I'd watch both of them again. I didn't see this coming. I think we've both got the same favorite. I think you've swayed me.
Serious?
You didn't try to sway me.
Acclamation.
It's Sirius Acclamation Mill. It is. I mean, she's great. Karis Brooks is incredible. She's so, so good.
And then it's Vox, yeah?
And then it's Vox. It is. And
it's such a great shot of like the Klingons, and it's so
adding
good.
To Klingon lore. It's Jaden is amazing, and his connection with Raimi is incredible. Like that's such a good scene. That's such an important scene for young men to watch.
And also it's like teaching debate and
yeah.
The doctor's in it, you know, doing doctor shit.
Those early episodes are really, really good. Yeah. It's a really good season.
Oh, well, there you have it.
There we have it. Interesting. Bit of a floppy ending, but a really, really strong kind of first half of the season. Honestly, overall, I really enjoyed Starfleet Academy. I really think it took some swings, and I think a good amount of them landed. And I really enjoy that it's doing something different. It genre hopped like Star Trek should. I really, really, really enjoyed it.
One of my favorite things that happened this season didn't happen during the show. It happened when we went into this kooky little bookstore, and they have a little poster section in the very, very back of the second room. And we found an old Star Trek poster that says, explore the galaxy, join Starfleet Academy. And it's, what is it from? Is that from the first movie?
No. That's from the original series. It's TOS.
So that's just from TOS.
That's just from because that's the Enterprise, the just Constitution regular ship. It's not the refit.
And we put it into the poster frame that we have. It used to hold your Back to the Future poster.
To be fair, it still holds my Back to the Future poster.
It's just that this was in front. Yeah. And I really like it, because this show has been really fun to watch. What would happen if you just were in a school learning about all this stuff? And they took some huge swings with just how much has happened with the burn and having to reunite these people and answer some questions and apparently try to save the universe all at the same time.
Grumble.
They did some fun things with subverting our expectations of how young people interact in this version of the future. I really enjoyed it. Visually, I thought it was stunning. I loved all the costuming. I loved how passionate all the actors were. I really loved all the prosthetics and everything. I would watch it again. Even knowing how much I don't like the end, I would watch it again for sure, because some of the dialogue is so snarky, so fast-paced, so fun. It does talk up to you with some of its talk.
It does, yeah.
And it does hit deep. There was some like big emotional swings that I really enjoyed. And yeah, I really enjoyed this one a lot.
You know what I'd love to know? My final thought here, and I need to try and find some young people in my life. I would love to know what somebody 18, 19, 20 thinks about this show, because that's not the demographic that is currently watching Star Trek. I don't think this show was necessarily trying to get that demographic, trying to get young people, but I'd love to see somebody in that age range watch this show and see if they enjoy it, see if they connect to it, because this is, to sound extraordinarily cliche and old, a very hip young show. Like, there's a lot of hip stuff that happens. Like, It's very trendy. It's very, like we said, Gen Z with some of like the lingo and the way they're acting. It's the most college dorm Star Trek has ever done. So I'd love to know what like some college nerds think about it. So I know that's a perspective that we can't bring, but I'd love to know if it hits, because it hasn't completely hit with the older generation of Trek fans. I'm wondering if it hits with younger people.
Very interesting.
Hey, young people, please email. I mean, our demographic is also not 20s, but if there are any of you out there, we would specifically, we want to hear from everybody, but would really love to hear from anyone kind of like teenagers, 20s, kind of see how this hit you.
If you're a teenager, please don't listen to this show. You need permission from your parents.
Even the 19-year-olds among you, please have it co-signed your parents.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Ambassador, what's happening next with Captain's Pod during the 60th anniversary year of Star Trek?
We're taking a break.
We're taking a break, just like Star Trek is.
Yeah, as we mentioned last episode, we are going to be taking a hiatus until May. You can keep up with us on our Ian and Danae Discord, on our Ian and Danae Patreon. You can send us any messages. Let us know what your episode go-to is in this interim time. Are you going to be going back and listening to a favorite? Let us know what that is. Maybe we can re-release some of your favorites while we're taking a break. When we come back, we're going to be diving into another fun season of Captain's Pod, where we will pick a theme and ride that out. Do we know what it is yet? No. He might. I don't. Stay tuned, and we can always post that stuff on Patreon. Also, just so that you know, there is always a chance that we will be able to do something between now and May, because it does seem like so far away. We do miss you, and we do miss doing the show. So likely we will be doing some Minecraft on our server with you guys. We have also some plans to try to go live again, and maybe finish Baldur's Gate.
Let's do it. May have to buy me a new computer first. Yes, the best way to hear what the next season of Captain's Pod is going to be like is on the Ian and Danae Patreon. We'll announce it there first, and then we'll announce it on Discord, but we will be returning with a new episode May 6th.
All those announcements are made to everybody. You do not have to be a paying patron to get those kinds of announcements. So just go to the Ian and Danae Patreon. The link is in the description. And just sign up to be part of the group, and then you'll get notified.
What I will say is that there will be anniversary celebrations happening, including a crossover with a couple of other podcasts. So we will be doing stuff to commemorate the 60th anniversary of our favorite franchise. All right, Ambassador, that last is all from
quote.
Us. Thank you. Our last quote. Thank you for doing another season of Star Trek with me. Like, we started with Picard. Who knew we would be doing Star Trek Starfleet Academy? It's crazy. Well, until next time. Come on, guys. I made a funny laugh from me.
And leap clear of all corporeal and make yourself greater from me.
Live long in Podspell.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Captain's Pod. If you'd like to get in touch with the podcast, you can send us an email to ian@ianandanae.com. And if you want to support the show and get the episodes early, you can go to our Patreon. That's patreon.com/ianandanae. If you want to catch the show live, we have those links down in the description for YouTube and Twitch. And then I think I'm supposed to close this hailing frequency, so bloop bloop, we're out. My mic fell off in the middle of a meeting this week.
That is a sentence that you could say any week, and I would say, yes, that happened.
So I've had this mic for...
since 1969.
I think we're coming up on like 12 years.
To be fair, the mic isn't the problem.
The mic arm.
Arm.
Yeah. So I got the mic and the mic arm at the same time.
Oh, okay.
And obviously the arm attachment part has been used and twisted and moved so much that it's kind of like worn itself down a little.
It's lost the attachment part.
Yes. And then my dad fixed it.
I'm going to leave that pause in.
He did. He fixed it with like a nut and a bolt, but then it doesn't have any like flexibility in a way. But that's fine, because I've just been using, you know, rubber bands and hair bands for years.
You've turned it into a musical instrument.
I have.
That many people will be familiar with over your podcasting career. Is there a reason you haven't just bought a new arm? They're not massively expensive.
So, I mean, I did, but I brought the wrong one, so I don't trust myself anymore.
I remember that. Yeah. You just never recovered from buying the wrong arm.
That was like 4 years ago, and I just have never recovered. I'm like, oh, okay, I obviously did not have the skill set. And honestly, it's at the bottom of my list.
Even to fit it. Yeah. I don't have the skill set to buy the right mic.
It's true, because I've messed up on it, and honestly, it's like, it's fine. I can deal with it, and I have so many other things to think about that it just always goes to the bottom of my
list. Plus, we're getting great material out of it.
Great, right, perfect. So then the big problem is that yesterday I'm just talking on a meeting and the threads of the screw and like the next little bit that the screw goes into,
mm-hmm.
it literally just fell.
Oh no.
And the threading is so worn down that it won't actually hold the microphone like thing anymore. Okay. So for all day yesterday and half of the day previous, any meeting I had to hold my microphone, my RE20 microphone. This is like a huge mic. I had to hold it in my hand.
It's not meant to be held.
No. And so what I would do is I just had my hand off of the screen when it was a video call. So it still looked like it was floating, but really it was just me holding it.
Oh no, that's so sad.
And then as we went in today, I knew I had so many meetings today. I wasn't going to be able to maintain practical. It.
You take so many notes during meetings as well. You like transcribe everything that's said.
So I took electrical tape and I just wrapped it around the bolt.
That's where my tape went.
Pressed it down really, really hard and then screwed it, and so that's what's holding it on right now, is that the actual bolt has tape around it, and I think we'll see what happens, but
stop messing with it.
After this fails, I don't know what else.
I think we buy a new one. I think you delegate that task to me.
I add it to
our Amazon shopping bag and we get you a mic.
The good news is it's not the whole arm, it's just the very end part.
I think we just buy the whole thing at this point.
Nah, that part's working. You need the new arm. That's what you need.
Well, yes. I actually think I need to use mine more because I think the strings are too... Strings. I think the springs are too tight.
I see.
So I think I need to do some flexing where I just unhook them and stretch them.
Welcome to IT chat. Well, actually, not really. No, it's equipment not
even,
chat.
We haven't even got to the computer problem yet.
Welcome to the equipment conversation.
Yeah, welcome to the audiophile equipment station.
Should I resist eating all these Oreos?
Nah, eat them. Wait, you have Oreos?
They're really...
You ate your daughter's Oreos.
They're really unhealthy for her. I got it.
Lucky dog.
How did it make it back over here?
Because I hit it. I didn't catch it. You are throw. Okay, here's what's happening.
Get back over here.
Here's what's happening. Jesus Christ! You have a pretty dark background with a spotlight above your head. So this Oreo is coming out of darkness while I'm also experiencing glare. I have no chance of catching it, and yet one of them I caught. Okay, let's do it. Coming from the pod.
This is great. This is such a great cookie.
Oreos. Don't let the dogs eat them.
I don't know where it went, babe. What? I can't find it. How many did you get?
You threw three. I got two.
Two Floreos. One rare. It's a Floreo cookie, honey. It comes with extra protein. No, fiber. Well, actually, maybe both. It's a little bit of carpet and a little bit of downstairs bug.
Definitely cockroach legs on that one. All right. Since when was IMDb doing these obnoxious full-page ads that stop you from using the website?
As soon as they realized they could make money off of you?
So I'm looking at an ad right now, and it says, press this button to collapse.
Okay.
And then it stays full screen and says, press this button to expand. I now cannot use the website.
In today's episode of What the Fuck Do We Do with Jaden This Episode?
So true. Again.
He is a beautiful Klingon, though.
He really is. He is stunning.
The reality is, right now, all I can think about are chips. And that's just a terrible thing to do right before podcast.
Oh, I guess we just do an episode about chips then.
These chips are good. Please email me if you understand that reference.
Oh, that's a BTS thing? Or a DNA thing, I think. This is pre-Ian fanning over Danae and Aaron.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. I missed that one.
Slab will get it.
Yeah. Actually, Slab hasn't watched any of Academy yet, so he won't get it.
No, he'll get that reference, I'm saying.
No, but he's not listening to this, so...
No, Slab to get to it, everything. He has to you listen. Lie.
Slab hasn't listened in a while.
Slab? The fuck, dude?
Right. Guilt trip for 7 years from now. Me and Danae both died in a horrific accident, and now you listen to this podcast. Finally catching up.
We are recording. Oh, fat shit.
Bollocks, that's a strong start.
Did
bloody
you?
Bloody hell.